By the way, it's no better in Breton. So don't, I'm not, you know, slagging you, not knocking you guys and elevating home. In America, you have a flood. Well, it's very important that the governor or the vice president or somebody flies over it in a helicopter and is pictured frowning at it. Oh, that's a very bad thing, that is. I completely disapprove of this flood, right? And then we go, oh, they care. Or on Thanksgiving, every single Thanksgiving, whoever is president or whoever wants to be will be seen in a food line handing out food for a little bit. And people go, oh, isn't that wonderful? Nehemiah, when he served, took no salary, was not paid for his work, and in fact, out of his own savings, paid for his own workers, their salaries, their upkeep, their board, their food. Chapter 5 of Nehemiah 14 through 16. The governors of the lands always taxed the people to get money for them. But not Nehemiah. He refused to accept food, money, or special privileges. In America, and this is much worse than it is in Britain, much worse. In America, there are a huge number of laws that do not apply to you if you're a congressman or a senator. Huge number. You have to do them or you go to prison, but they don't have to do them. That's not Nehemiah's way. He refused to accept any special privileges. He also would not let his people take land or funds from all of them. They, from anybody, they all worked alongside the common laborer doing exactly what the common laborer did every single day. I respect that. My wife and I went to see the movie Wonder Woman. I normally don't care for any movies that are comic book based or even science fiction. And that really gets the Star Trek and the Star Wars people angry at me and the DC and the Marvel and all that. But frankly, that's not my world. I didn't grow up reading comic books. But the preview of this one was interesting enough for me that we went to see it. And it was very well done. A huge number of religious allusions in it. And I wrote on Facebook, if you're available there, don't have to be a friend, you can just go and look at it, a review of it and also a mention of the religious allusions in it. But one of the lines I did not mention, but which I respected, was that she looks at the British High Command and she has no respect for them. She said, in my day, the general goes out and fights in front with his men. People, I agree. One of the reasons we have so many wars is because those people that declare war don't fight them. And instead, they'll send your sons to fight for them. And my son's a Marine. I'm invested here as well. Nehemiah would not do this. And then chapter 6, verses 2 through 4, he was not afraid to say no. Gentlemen, the word no is a spiritual word. It is also a complete sentence. You do not have to explain it. When somebody asks me to do things, often I'll have to say no. I have to say no to, I'd say, right, it's dropped a bit. It used to be 9 out of 10. I'd say now it's more like 6 out of 7 because I'm not asked as much anymore because people know I've cut back. 6 out of 7 calls I get, people will say, would you come speak to us here? Would you come do this? We'll pay you this, whatever. No. Why? I don't really need to explain that. No is a spiritual word. But you know why, and the reason is, I want to work here. I want to be with my wife. I want to take care of the staff. No is a spiritual word. Learn how to use it. He didn't play nice. Whenever the workers, when the leader said, no, you must sit down with us and have a table. I've had people say, oh, this is a big problem. Well, here's an example. I was given several talks at a Christian university. And after one of the talks, some men came up to me, and I could tell they were preachers and elders because they were all wearing polyester suits. This is back in the 80s. You could have rubbed them on a carpet and stuck them on a wall. I'm serious. But they all gathered around. And they were not being disrespectful or mean at all. I'm being that way to them because I'm just telling it in a funny way. But they're good guys. But they said, Brother Mead, we really need you while you're in town. We're all going off in this little room over here, and we're talking about this church problem that we're having and this, that, and the other. And they just went on at some length. And when they were finally done, I went, no. And they just looked at each other, and they did it all again, like I wasn't there the first time they said it. We're all going into this little room because of this little, and I said, no. And finally, one of them says, why not? I said, I don't want to go in the little room. And you're talking about a church that's not my church. And sacred gossip is still gossip. But we could really use your help. I have no input into somebody else's affairs. No. Some of them got very angry at me about that, but that's all right. I had other people, when they found out about it, said, you know, Christ would have done it. Really? Have you read the Gospels? Christ wasn't as Christian as you, evidently. Because he said no quite a lot and even disappeared, basically saying, why don't you guys take a boat to the other side of the lake? And then he was gone. They're kind of, where'd he go? And he'd be away for 20 days to pray. There are introverts and extroverts. Learn who you are. And by the way, there are different forms of each of those, and that's why you have Myers-Briggs and Enneagrams and all that kind of thing. I know that if I want to do this, I really can't do much on a Saturday night. I need to be away from people to charge to be with people. And if you have small groups, many of you do, and in the summer most of them take a break, but you'll say, many of you have said, Patrick and Cammie, come on over. A couple of problems with that. One, when I enter a small group, it kills a small group. It does. Why do you like small groups? Discussion, fellowship, and then you invite the Jesus guy in, it kills things. It does. We don't have to like it. It's real. But the other thing is, normally by Sunday night, I'm really done with people for a little bit. Doesn't mean I don't love you. It means I need to recharge. I need to read. I need to think. My wife understands this. God bless her. Because I can be sitting there with books and just kind of frowning at it for hours, and she won't disturb me because she knows that's why when he walks over to the computer to write the sermon, it takes 10 minutes because he's been working on it for a year, and he's working. Leave him alone. I have an open door policy, which has been a complete failure because people are coming in. But you understand, I need that time. Other people, if you're an extrovert, you need people to recharge. Know who you are. Learn to say no. Putting it in the wrong book. Nehemiah 6, 11 through 13, my favorite passage. They come to him and say, the enemies are coming. The enemies are coming. They're coming to kill you. We cannot protect you. You need to run. We love you, so you need to get away from here. And his response is, will a man like me run? Oh, I love that one. That out John Wayne's John Wayne, doesn't it? Closing with Nehemiah before we move on. His real heroism is in chapter 13, and I've actually never heard a sermon on that. He fixes everything. They're in great shape. They are moving. So he quietly packs up. They've got it. He goes home. Years later, he hears it's broken down. Some of the wall is breaking down. The people aren't doing the maintenance. And he gets up and does it all again. Now that's a hero. Keep mentioning John Wayne today. Let's just stick with the theme. When I was a boy, I thought the Cowboys were heroes. And in the movies, they are. I get that. And in reality, some of them were. And some of them weren't. Got that. My point is, I thought they were heroes because they saved the day. Or they saved the town. Or they saved the little girl that was wandering too close to the railroad track. I grew up to find out that a real hero is the one who saves the town, knowing they're going to have to save it again tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. A real hero is a person that saves a little girl wandering near the train track, knowing that they're going to have to do it every single day of that little girl's life. A real hero often does not see the results. I want you to think about nurses in hospital, for example. They come in, they care for you, but they care for you when you're sick. When you're well, they don't get to really rejoice in that, do they? In some cancer clinics, they'll do. They'll ring a bell. They'll have a little ceremony. But then you go off and you live your redeemed whole life. They don't see that. They see the next patient. But they keep doing it. That, to me, is a hero. That's what I'm talking about. The policeman puts on their uniform knowing that tomorrow the crime is still going to be there. That's what I'm talking about. Now, how do we apply that to us? Oh, my goodness. It's easy done. I cannot tell you the number because it's been huge. Of people, not just ministers, but ministers are involved in this. A few elders have been involved in this, but a ton of men who volunteered to do a work for the church have come to me saying, I quit, I'm done. These people are ungovernable. They will not help. They break the promises. All right, understand something. First of all, this is not business. You are dealing with, if we had 650 today, 650 cats who are here voluntarily and perhaps only momentarily. They're not here because they're getting a paycheck or they're forced to. They have other options. Didn't we all drive past other church buildings on the way here? Of course we did. File that away. But here's the big one. How patient should you be with these people? How do heroes do it? They do it every single time. Or let's do it another way. Be as patient with other people as you want God to be with you. I'm 60 years old, and I'm still not all that good. When I was a teenager, I was thinking, I cannot wait till I grow up and the temptations aren't so bad. They're just different. And sometimes their temptations are still there, but the energy to actually do anything about them is not there. You get that point as well. Kind of like the old dog on the porch. He doesn't chase the car, but he'll still raise his head and go woof every time it goes by. You know, that's Nehemiah got up and did it again. Do we have the manliness to get up and do it again? That's what I'm calling for. Now, we have I'm going to do a huge jump here. Whew. Because we did Nehemiah. We got about a half hour left here, max, not even quite that. I'm going to start us on a discussion, which because of the format here is almost always entirely one way, sorry. But I want you to know about these passages. Guys, if I were to be asked what the besetting sin or fault, really so much, of a male is, I would say attention. We can sincerely be talking to our wife saying, I love you, you're the love of my life, I've loved nothing greater. Oh, look, a red car. And there's a reason for that, if you want to go into all the neuroscience reasons for it, and I believe a theological reason for it as well. I believe we were designed to meet threats. So we see movement, we see color, we see shape. That's part of our cones and rods. That's the way we deal with things. Women's besetting, I would have to say, is that they believe that they're normal, therefore you must think like them. Most men never want women to think like us. We don't really expect them to. They do expect you to think like them. That's a problem. And I tell them it is. No, it's unreasonable. So that said, why are men so sexually tempted? By the way, women are much more now because the world's fighting to make them that way. It's doing everything it can to make them that way. But men often lose focus. But they also, there's another reason. Men want to be special. Number two reason why why ministers leave the ministry. Every time I say that, everybody wants to know what number one is. Finances. Number two. Adultery. Now, why? Because women come up to ministers thinking we're like this all the time. Holy, thoughtful, reasonable, focused, passionate. They don't see us kicking a lawnmower and calling it names. They think we mow the lawn in a suit, hovering with angels singing choruses. They think on our iPad are Gregorian chants, iPod rather, Gregorian chants. And because, and your wife knows different. Therefore, you're not so special in her eyes. That's a man's view here. So, there was a guy in the Bible that wrote a book only to men. Did you know that? His name was Solomon, and he had a bunch of sons. So he wrote a book called Proverbs. He actually didn't write most of the Proverbs. The Bible says he collected them. He was a collector. He put them together in no particular order. So don't try to read a chapter of Proverbs. It really doesn't work that way. Read a proverb, generally speaking. But there were a couple of times that he got on a roll and hit several in a row because he knew his boys were going to have issues because he had issues. About sex. Proverbs chapter 4, starting at verse 23. Above all else, guard your heart. Everything you do flows from it. Watch who's in charge of your heart. Be very careful who gets into your heart. We'll talk about how that works later. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Guys, how hard is this to do in the workplace? It is real hard. In some areas, harder than others. If you're in law enforcement or military, it's really hard. You're in construction, really hard. If you're insurance sales, might be easier. You get the point, right? It's according to who you're with. Still, I worked in the medical field. And I got to tell you something. The nurses I was around had some of the dirtiest mouths I'd ever heard in my life. And I began to think like that. When I realized I was thinking like that, I actually resigned from one hospital to go work elsewhere. And somebody goes, well, why didn't you just get, because I told them, they said, well, why didn't you just, you should be stronger than that. You should be tougher. I said, you know, a strong guy knows when to leave the field of battle and say, nope, I can't win that one. Paul didn't tell Timothy to be strong. He said, flee youthful lust. Sometimes you got to get out. So I got out. Watch out. Don't let it in there. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Do we need to, everybody understands that one, don't you? Right. Give careful thought to the paths for your feet. Now, anybody got an older version for verse 26? NIV is trying to tell you what it really means. What did it really say? Make level paths for your feet. You may have to work on this. Watch where you're going. Here's another way to put it. Don't make life harder than it has to be. Just don't make life harder than it has to be. My son, you may believe that he was saying this as a way to ingratiate himself with me. He was not. He was he's a pretty stark, ravingly honest guy. He was, I think, probably a sophomore in high school. And as we were driving home, he said, Dad, I got a question. Why do so many teens always gripe about their parents and fight with their parents? And I said, well, I'm sure there are a variety of reasons. And he said, just doesn't make sense to me. Why would you want to make life that hard? He already understood. We negotiate, we talk, we reason. But to treat me as an enemy before he even walks in the room, that just makes the world harder. There's no reason to do that. I was very proud of him. Excuse me. He's going to need to remember that because his 2.5-year-old daughter is a force of nature. Every time I look at her, I just go. Anyway, take a look. Don't make it harder than it has to be. Come on, people. Be steadfast in all of your ways. Be the guy people can count on. You know, I've had people ask me, why do you always cut yourself down in a pulpit? I don't see myself doing that. I call that, you need to be open in the pulpit, because this is the easiest place in the world to hide. You need to be open. That way, you know what you've got. And I think I'm honest saying this, and you can call me on the carpet here, even publicly now if you wish to. If you meet me on the street, this is who I am. If you're in my house, this is who I am. This is the way I do things. Because he's saying, be predictable. Know who you are. Stick in that lane. Know who you are. Now, do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. By the way, not turning to the right or left means that you'll have to say no to people. Okay. I've had people say, oh, you've got to watch this show. No, I don't. No, it's not required. I checked. It's not mandatory. It's not in the U.S. criminal code. Take a look at how this works. We're going to look at the progression. We're going to start it now. And I'm going to give you the passages if you'd like to write them down before we leave. Okay? I'm not going to do it quite yet. Chapter 5, pay attention, turn your ear to my words, that you can maintain discretion, so you can preserve knowledge. Here we go, verse 3. Here's where it starts. The lips of the adulterous woman drip honey. Her speech is smoother than oil. Where does it start? It starts with how they speak to you. You know, I've been told by many, so I believe it, that there are guys who really think supermodels are fantastically attractive. I don't, you know, they're pretty, and I'm sure they're, you know, nice people, but I don't look at them and go, wow, I wish I was married to that. A couple of reasons, but the main one is I don't know them, and they're not nice to me. And if I saw them on the street, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't see me back, right? I'm at that age now, I'm at that awkward age, where I can actually walk through the Cool Springs Galleria and the cosmetic people don't offer me samples. Some of you are not there yet, and they hound you every time. Now they look at me and go, oh, we don't have enough product. Anybody bring the spatula? I remember the first time that they actually did that and turned to somebody else. I was almost hurt. I was going, no, wait, I've been wanting that for years. I've arrived. But when somebody, you know, I don't think a supermodel is going to see me or whatever, but what if a woman around you starts treating you as special and tells you you're special and somehow works in there the same thing Satan told Adam and Eve? God's holding out on you. There's something you should have, you don't. See how that works? Oh, you're so great, and ha-ha, and a little touching, you know, and you walk in, and your wife's going, take the kid, you know, and you're going, all right, I'm seeing a contrast here. All right, got it? Watch that. That should send up flares. When a woman tells me that I'm the greatest preacher she's ever heard, and they do, stop it, Steve. They do. There are some women that don't get out much. Or that others will compliment me on something. I thank them for it, and I do appreciate it. But in my head, I've set the alarm. I've set tripwires to say, be careful. I don't think women are lusting after Patrick. Please get me. What I'm saying is Patrick can make stupid mistakes if Patrick doesn't watch out. All right? They may not be trying to trap me at all, but they may put things in my head that make my heart wonder. So I need to set up the tripwires for me. No, believe me, I've gone my entire life without women hunting me down, wanting to marry me and take me. So I'm cool with that. But there are those that do hunt others. What else? In the end, she's bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths wander aimlessly, but she does not know it. Think about this. A woman who is after another man, guys, can I just be blunt? A woman who will cheat with you will cheat on you. Exactly. Your eyes will tire of her and move on to another. because the more she knows you and the less she becomes a thing and more a real person, the more you chase the dream again. And that's why you get 60 and 70-year-olds that are having plastic surgery and buying red sports cars and divorcing their wives and you're trying to act like they're 30. They're still chasing something. That's aimlessly. So what's the first rule? Verse 7, now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Here it is. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Physical distance. We have a problem with physical distance now. It's closed by computers we carry in our pockets. Guys, I'm sorry. The world we lived in was an easier world to live in some ways. Oh, people sinned. People sinned, and we all knew that. But if you wanted to see pictures of naked women, you had to go to certain stores. Now, they didn't have to be pornography stores. They could be like a 7-Eleven, but you had to ask for them back behind the counter. And there were embarrassment steps to keep you from there. Your sons and grandsons, girls are sending them pictures. Unsolicited, often. I've had women come to me whose sons, and I knew the sons, and so I believed the sons. We're not trying to egg on girls who would come and tap on his window at night. Why? Because their music and media tells them that's what you do, and that you're only valuable that way. To the point where sex becomes as common as shaking hands. And we're guys here. One social historian who is not a Christian or a prude, but refers to college girls as sperm dumpsters because they have learned to act like that. It is difficult for young boys today, far more than you. I looked at my son once when we were in, I see some people from Michigan. We were walking around Great Lakes Shopping Center. It's a mile around, and it's like an outlet that's enclosed. We were walking around there, I think, in a futile search for shoes for him. He has size 15 feet. It didn't happen. Everybody said, we could order them. Well, we can order them. And it hit me suddenly the way people were dressed, and so I would turn my head, and there's a Victoria's Secret's poster. So you turn your head over here, and there's another kind of poster. And I stopped, I looked at him, and said, Duncan, I'd like to apologize to you. He said, why? I said, I'm leaving you a world where there's nowhere you can look. I'm leaving you a world where it's not safe for you to look anywhere. We started talking about it. We were driving along once, my truck was just filthy. And there was these girls dancing on the side of the road, you know, free truck raw, you know, it's not free. And Duncan said, you need your truck washed. I said, yeah, but not by them. And we drove on, and he said, I get it. It's not really good for me to be around, because they were not wearing a lot, you know, they were trying to get business. He said, it's not really good for me to be around that. And I said, son, to be fair, it's not good for me to be around that. And that's when they go, ooh, you know, but still, the point is, do we need to be open about this? We need to talk about this. Stay away. Learn to block certain people. Learn to not have certain apps on your phone, if that's what it requires. William Backus, retired now, I believe he's still alive, Christian psychiatrist, wrote a book years ago called Telling Yourself the Truth. He used as an illustration a man who was addicted to strip clubs. Now, I'm not going to fight what's addiction, what's not. Just go with me here. And he had kept away for a long time, but then next session he had failed. And Dr. Backus said, how? What happened? And he goes, well, I drive by it every day on the way home. And I was in a weak moment. And Dr. Backus said, why do you drive by it? He said, it's on my way to work. He said, there are other roads. And they got out a street city map, and he showed him other roads. Get away. This is why there are movies we don't go to. There are shows I do not watch. For the life of me, I will never understand why Christians watch shows like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. Why? How do you justify this? It's a home shopping channel for lust. Why would you do this? Don't go there. As C.S. Lewis put it, if a sewage pipe ends in your house, the worst possible decision would be to open the pipe. And he was referring to TV. Why not? Lest you lose your honor to others, your dignity to one who is cruel. It's the way it goes, people. It's going to go bad. Lest strangers feast on your wealth. Only people who love divorce are lawyers. I understand. Some exceptions. Kind of like Mark Twain was asked if they had a criminal lawyer in town. He said, probably, but we can't prove it. Sorry. I got started. I can't get out of this now. But one day I'm going to need you. I hope that we can flash and your memory goes away like Men in Black. Your toil enriched the house of another. How many people? They divorced. When you divorce, does your financial position go up or down? Way down. Everybody way down. And now somebody else can live in your house with your children, and you're still paying. He's saying, do you see where this is going? The concept he keeps trying to bring up is there's a path to this, and there are consequences of this. All right? Consequences. Don't let your kids live consequence-free, by the way. That's a commercial. At the end of your life, you will groan when your flesh and body are spent. You will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or turn my ear to my instructors. And soon I was in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people. We have about 7 minutes left here. I want to really stress this next bit. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Love your wife. Enjoy your wife. Do not try to find joy outside of your wife. Keep that at home. We could go back and say, let your eyes look straight ahead of you, all of that. Should your springs overflow in the streets and your streams of water in the public squares? In other words, should you be your streams, people here, is talking about sexual emissions. Should you allow that just to go anywhere? Should that just go everywhere? Is that what it's for? Or is this the repository of your love? And not just sexually, but your love. But sexually is part of it. Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed. Yes, he is saying, may you be sexually active and enjoy it. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. The wife of your youth doesn't mean in your young wife. You get that? The wife of your youth is the one you married when she was young, but that doesn't mean she's young now. You still rejoice in that one. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. Isn't that a great phrase? We had some people over yesterday. Not on purpose, just kind of happened. No, it did. We had them over. And we were talking just general stuff, and then how it brought up, but I said, this month, at the end of the month, Cammie and I will have been married 38 years. And they're all going, wow, they're not even 38. And they're thinking, if she'd shot you instead of married you, she would have been out for years by now. It's a life sentence, so it is. And yet, you can hold me to this. How do I treat Cammie? How do I speak of her? How does she treat me and speak of me? When we look at each other, do we automatically smile? Have you noticed that? Do we still show each other love and concern, and are we polite to each other? In fact, we like to take a cruise once a year if we can to get away. If you've never been on a cruise, I highly recommend them. But don't think, I can't wait to get into my spacious room. They're tiny. In fact, the little hallways, I wonder how some people get in. I told Cammy, I said, when I leave in the morning, you're going to hear when I get out. Because of that, we're moving about in there. And it's always, oh, sorry, excuse me, oh, no problem. And I stopped one time, I looked at her, and I said, you know how cool it is that after 30-plus years, we're still saying, excuse me, that's okay, don't worry. That is neat, but that required consistent work. We're not going to let it slip, ever. I have a preacher friend who's now very close to death. He's quite old, but he was old when he told me this many years ago. He said, my wife has never scrubbed the floor. I said, this is before I was married. I said, really? I was thinking, wow, your house must be, because no. He says, I scrub them. We're all looking at each other. We'd never seen him outside of a suit. So we had this picture, you know. And he said, no, I treasure her. I don't let her take out the garbage. I don't let her fill up the gas tank. I don't let her. Now, I'm not saying you need to go that way. What I'm saying is I could tell this man was still intoxicated with his wife and protective of his wife, loving of his wife. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? Your ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all your paths. You're not going to be able to lie to him and justify it to him. Now, as we wrap this bit up, and by the way, the next bit we're going to start with next time, he takes a little bit of a break here and talks about other things, and then he comes back to this talking in chapter 6, starting at verse 24, and we're going to look also in chapter, all the way through chapter 7, because he gets on a roll there, and we talk about the progression. We're going to talk about that next week. You might think, well, why are we talking so much about sex? The reason is not only because we have issues with it as individuals, the world is going crazy. And we need to explain to them what you do has consequences. It does matter. The wife of your youth, can I explain to you one of the greatest reasons why people should not have sex or even close sex or kind of sex before they're married? It's because those people that you did that with don't age. You know what I mean? So, you get older, your wife hits menopause, you know, and she goes from being sweet and loving to, you know, at a drop of a hat. You never know. I always told my wife I loved menopause. I said, because it means at least 3 or 4 times a day I'm dating a hottie, you know, and it's exciting. We saved on fuel bills. It was great. You know, I'd just stand there, warm my hands, and she'd say, Patrick, you know, back off. Head would spin around. But the people you had sex with when you were 17 and 18, and your head are still young. And you start comparing. And your wife stands no chance. That's one of the reasons why God says, make it exclusive. Keep this in your house. That way you have nothing to compare. So here's a story to leave you, but remember to start at 6:24 and go through chapter 7 so we can do this and move on to our next subject. Story to leave you. An old man and an old woman laying in bed. They've been married forever. She leans over and whacks him. He goes, what's that for? They're Scottish. She goes, that's for being a lousy lover. He's a little bit stunned for a while. He thinks a bit. Then he whacks her. She goes, what's that for? And he goes, that's for knowing the difference. God's way is smart. Let's try it his way. Let us this week make sure we set some tripwires, set some distance, but that also we treat all women as God's daughters, that we're going to have to account for how we treated them, and we look upon them as God's daughters and not our prey. God bless. We'll see you next week.